Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's July 18th. 66 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City and also in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
All right. Hey, good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch Beck. Some increasing moisture throughout the day today, so we do have a better chance of seeing a few storms. We had some roll through areas of South Salt Lake County, Utah County yesterday, expecting a better chance moving northward throughout the day today. So partly cloudy into the afternoon. Plan on some isolated storms for Park City and for Heber. Temperatures in the upper 80s today for Park City, about 88 for the high and 94 in Heber. We'll see more of the same into Friday, some lingering moisture rotating around the ridge of high pressure that's shifting westward to the south of us will continue to bring in enough moisture to generate more isolated to scattered storms. On Saturday, temperatures near 87. Not going to be a washout of a day or on your Friday by any means, with improving conditions into the weekend, but temperatures are going to remain slightly above average. Usually we're in the low 80s this time of year for Park City. We'll be about 87 Friday, 88 on Saturday. Moisture starts to clear out Saturday, but do have about a 30% chance of a lingering storm on Saturday afternoon, with sunshine taking over on Sunday, Monday next week. Temperatures aren't changing a whole lot with the ridge of high pressure kind of situated to the south and eventually to the west of us. We'll be 87 into early next week with upper 80s on Tuesday and on Wednesday. Could start to see a few more storms towards the middle of next week. Heber looking at those 90s today, tomorrow, and on Saturday. Chance of storms through Saturday afternoon. Plan on those being fairly isolated in nature. Sunshine on Sunday, Monday. Temperatures about 93 for the high, and then we'll be in those mid-90s Tuesday, Wednesday next week, with a chance of storms again on Wednesday as well.
Okay, sure would like to see some of that rain up here.
Would be nice.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
It's 8:08, and on the phone with us now with a trails report, we have Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. It's going to be pretty warm out there this weekend, so the first thing I want to say is just remember, if you're hiking or riding with a dog, just be really aware of their need for water and rest and shade. So right off the bat, we don't have a whole lot to talk about. We've got Basin Rec is saying they've got no updates on their end. Everything is good to go. And we wanted to say that we have a, my dog is mauling me. We have a Jupiter Peak Steeplechase will be happening on Saturday. That's going to impact CMG, Apex Keystone, Shadow Lake, Scott's Bypass, Powerline, and Spiro. The impact should be done by probably 11:30 in the day. So maybe during that time of the day, from 8 o'clock to 11 or 11:30 or so, right up out of the first time lot, kind of the village area and the trails up from there. Just steer clear. There will be racers on the trails there. South Summit Trails is reporting that all trails out in that area are good to go. I highly recommend Slate Creek if you haven't been out there. It's amazing. That said, all trails right now are pretty dry and dusty, getting a little moon dust out there, and we're just doing the rain dances here at Mountain Trails, hoping that we can get some moisture into the soil so we can continue a couple projects we have. And one other thing is an update on Seldom Seed. We did put some erosion matting in some of the turns. So if you're not accustomed to seeing that erosion matting, just beware, it's there. It's really sticky and great to ride. But with the moon dust, it's actually been easy to kind of put in place. So that's out there. And other than that, I got nothing. So hope you all have a great weekend, and we'll see you out there.
Okay, Laura, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Council member Tanya Hansen. She'll recap Wednesday's meeting. Later on, Park City School District COO Mike Tanner with an update on the district's construction projects and the latest on the proposed athletic space improvements. Finally, Swanner Nature Preserve and Eco Center Director of Visitor Experience and Exhibits Hunter Klingensmith, along with mindfulness coach Rebecca Brenner, telling us about some of their upcoming events. Well, one person is dead following a single vehicle car crash on State Route 224 early this morning. According to several news reports, the car, a 2019 Subaru, was traveling southbound on 224 near the Kearns Boulevard intersection. just before 2 a.m. this morning when it veered off the road for unknown reasons and hit a tree. The car then caught on fire, and the driver, who has not been identified, was pronounced dead at the scene. Both lanes of 224 were closed until about 5:45 this morning. No cause of the crash has been released. An investigation is underway. We'll update the story as soon as more information becomes available. Well, Mountainlands Community Housing Trust has released its study on the economic impact of affordable housing. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that it shows net positives across the board.
Mountainlands advocates for and helps create affordable housing in Summit and Wasatch counties, and a study the nonprofit commissioned shows affordable housing has a net positive economic impact for the Wasatch Back. But local leaders fear the study leaves out costs and downsides. Consultants at Economic and Planning Systems used local data to estimate the return on investment per unit of affordable housing, both for rent and for sale. The upshot is that either type of unit can return about $580,000 in community benefits in about 1 year. Per unit, rentals require a $100,000 subsidy from taxpayers. Owned units require about $400K each. The return on investment takes into account money new residents spend, new tax revenue, and less tangible benefits like volunteer hours, new students, and lower employee turnover. EPS looked at the cost to provide parking, but it didn't factor in other things like utilities. So when EPS planner Andrew Knudsen presented the findings to Summit County's mayors Tuesday, Camas Mayor Matt McCormick had questions.
The study would have been more complete had we have seen some analysis on the cost to provide water and sewer, the cost to provide police and EMS and all of those services.
Knudsen says those costs are inevitable, and the study's primary purpose is to demonstrate that affordable housing isn't a total economic loss.
The fire district, the water district, the school district, they're going to incur the costs either with small homes or large homes, locally occupied homes or second homes. The growth will occur regardless.
However, Councilmember Roger Armstrong says he doesn't see growth as inevitable.
Growth is not going to come if we zone appropriately, which is what we've done to try and mitigate growth.
In 2022, Summit County's population went on the decline. But when the county does grow, the numbers show it tends to grow older and wealthier. Park City School District enrollment has been decreasing. And EPS reports that since 2010, the number of Wasatch Back households making $200,000 or more annually has almost quadrupled. In the same time period, the number of households making $75,000 or less has decreased by 17%. U.S. Census Bureau data from 2015 indicates that back then, less than half of Summit County workers lived within county borders, and around 15,000 workers commute into the county on weekdays. More statistics are available at kpcw.org, and Mountainlands plans to release the full study in the next few weeks. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Tanya Hansen. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council took a tour of the Mill Creek Commons. These are the city offices for Mill Creek. What was the purpose of the visit here?
Well, we wanted to experience and see what Mill Creek has done with their outdoor public space and check out their wonderful new city building. I don't know if you've been there or not, but they are doing some really impressive things for their community. And as we think about the possibilities of Kimball Junction area, what are we trying to do there? And perhaps we can gain some ideas from folks like Mill Creek, what they're doing, and bring that back to our community.
So that's kind of assuming that the Sheldon Richens building, as we have now, is going away?
Yes. Yes. Or, you know, maybe incorporate some of this into the area around the Skull Candy building. We're just trying to keep our options open and think about things that we could do for our citizens.
All right. So what was it that you thought was so great about the public space?
Well, I don't know if you've been there, but it's really interesting. And, you know, it's easy for Mill Creek because they're a brand new city, so they're starting from scratch. But they had an outdoor area that included a climbing wall. They offer summer roller skating, and in the winter that turns into a winter ice skating rink. And then they had a wonderful water feature where, you know, kids and families were playing yesterday. They activate this area every day with different activities. They have festivals, food trucks, music, farmers market, just an array of special events for their citizens. Mm. So that was really a fun area to see what was going on there. And then we went in and we saw their city services building, which is a brand new, amazing facility. It's six stories. There are restaurants and retail on the main floor, and other floors are used for employees. Their very top floor, which has spectacular views of Mount Olympus, is used for special events, weddings, corporate events, you know, all kinds of things can happen up there. They had a wonderful council chambers, which was, really, you know, state of the art with their technology and can seat over 200 people. It was a very impressive building.
Yeah, what if Snyderville Basin was one day to incorporate as Snyderville? What would that mean? I mean, a county building that what, then have to be sold to a municipality?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Let's move on to the Summit County Attorney's work with service districts. Summit County Attorney Margaret Olson presented the current contracts with several special service districts, including our currently High Valley Transit, Basin Recreation, and Mountain Regional Water pay a flat rate, and the majority of those special service districts pay nothing. So is the county losing money on this?
Well, I don't know if they're losing money, but they're overtaxing that particular department. And that was the message from Margaret yesterday. The role of a county attorney's office is a public prosecutor and public safety, as well as civil advisor for the county, specific to the Children's Justice Center. And they're spending a lot of time working with all of our special service districts. Summit County has 28 special service districts, believe it or not, 25 which are asking the county attorney for their help and services. And this office is just being overtaxed. So Margaret came and asked, what can we do to help relieve some of the pressure that her department is feeling? And that was the discussion yesterday. We've asked the attorney's office to come back with a plan of what we can do to help solve this problem. She's going to go back and speak to these special services districts to get their feedback on what might be appropriate for them. Then she'll come back to the county council and we'll have more discussion on this.
Okay. The numbers reported by Margaret Olson says that district-related work taking up 40% of Chief Civil Deputy Attorney Dave Thomas's working hours. She calling it the workload in a crisis state. So I think what the presentation wasn't necessarily about the workload. The issue is whether free legal advice and work for special services districts should continue. So how do you feel about that? Should they budget that themselves?
Yes, I do. One way or another, I think these special service districts need to pay for the services they're getting from that department. And is that them going out for outside legal help? Possibly. Is it for increasing staff in the county attorney's office? Possibly. There's a lot of options there.
Okay. The county council officially adopted the new format of behavioral health services with the University of Utah. That involved taking over services in county schools. This was adopted without any discussion unanimously. So can you tell us how much the contract is for?
Let's see. I don't have how much that contract is for. Oh, yes. Maximum allowable payable cost is $380,000 a year.
All right. And how long is this contract for? Did they get another long-term contract?
Yes. It starts effective immediately, and it goes until June 30th, 2029.
All right. So I thought that you had already worked out an agreement with, or is this different than what was approved with the doubling and tripling of the monthly rates for this contract?
This is specific to the schools.
Okay. And so what is the services that they're providing?
Minimum services provided would be six school-based master's and doctoral level clinicians providing 20 hours a week, one psychologist serving the program, one school-based psychiatrist available 10 hours a week, and all clinicians will be licensed or working towards their certification. It will also, during the summer, include six part-time school-based clinicians offering services to our schools.
All right, so are we talking all county schools, or are those just in the unincorporated area?
All county schools.
All right. The county council did not vote the emergency services sales tax as expected. How come?
Well, we're having conversations with various groups and citizens throughout the county, trying to gauge their perception of us putting this emergency sales tax on the ballot. We're getting some very positive feedback. But once we approve the language and approve it going on the ballot, we can no longer be out there initiating those conversations. We can have, you know, people can ask us questions, we can give replies to facts around this, but we can no longer really be asking for feedback and getting feedback from our constituents. So we want to wait until July 31st. That is the drop dead date. And then this, we will agree to the language that will be going on the ballot.
All right, so who else do you want to talk to?
Well, I'm talking to the Colville City Council on Monday. We're talking to the senior citizens, the chamber board, groups of that type.
All right, and so what we're talking about now is just a half of 1% sales tax to raise how much money?
The calculation is with a half a percent sales tax, we would raise $15 million. That money needs to be tied to the impacts of tourism on our county. And so the emergency services sales tax revenue must be used for the following things. First of all, the revenue generated from the tax must be used to offset the impacts of tourism. So this tax would be used for emergency medical services, fire protection, law enforcement, search and rescue, landfill, and solid waste.
All right. And it could be up to 1%, but you're planning just to talk about a half percent at this point?
That's correct.
What if you wanted to raise it more than that? What would you have to do?
It would have to go back on the ballot. Uh-huh. And it needs to go on the ballot every 10 years. The citizens would have to agree to it.
All right. So the idea is that this tax generates $15 million to cover a projected budget shortfall. What are some of the biggest items contributing to that shortfall?
Well, as you know, that in 2023, we allocated close to $5 million for EMS services. And that was mandated by the legislature. They passed a bill in 2021, Bill 303, which required municipalities and counties to ensure at least a minimum level of 911 services. So we, you know, had to move forward and update our EMS services and pay for that. Also, we have a landfill cell that needs to be replaced. And that's to the tune of almost $5 million. So those are the two big impacts right now. But, you know, as we speak with our other departments, our law enforcement, our search and rescue, EMS, you know, they are stretched. They're getting a lot more calls than they used to. They're asking for more help. And we need more funds to be able to support the needs of our citizens and these departments.
Financial Officer Matt Levitt estimates that 65% of sales tax revenue comes from visitors who don't live in Summit County. How does he know that?
You know, he crunched the numbers every which way possible. He and Jeff Jones, I don't know exactly how they came up with that number, but it took them days and days to come up with that number. I don't know the details on that.
Is there another way to shift the tax burden, say, all 100% onto visitors, like the transient room tax?
Yeah, again, you know, I don't know how they figure out where that expenditure's coming from. So I don't know how we could do that. That would be great if we could. I just don't know the answer to that.
So will the county go through truth in taxation for property taxes in case this doesn't pass in November?
Well, we discussed that yesterday as well, and you know, we're really gambling, we're rolling the dice here, and we've decided not to go through truth and taxation because we feel, and we receive feedback from a lot of folks, we feel it would be confusing for the citizens to have this initiative going at the same time truth and taxation. So we want to keep it clean and clear and be sending out one message. And that message is that we need to pass this on the ballot in November.
All right. So again, you wouldn't go through truth and taxation. That would mean $15 million in cuts to services.
Possibly. Yeah.
All right.
It's very concerning, but you know, I am opposed to raising property taxes. I feel that we are taxing some of our citizens out of the Summit County market. I'm a little apprehensive not to have a fallback plan right now, but we're very positive about the emergency sales tax initiative going on the ballot. Wasatch County citizens passed this last year with 67% of the vote. So we're very hopeful that the word gets out for our citizens that they understand what this tax is on the ballot and they will vote to approve this.
All right. Well, speaking of taxes, during council and public comments, you heard a man from Samak who wanted an asphalt driveway on a private road. The council told him they could not accommodate that. He complained about not seeing any benefit from his tax dollars. So how did you respond?
Well, you know, we cannot go in on a privately owned property and do someone a favor. If you do it for one, you've got to do it for all. So that's just not realistic for us to be able to do that. But as I thought through his comments, you know, it's an insurance policy he's paying because hopefully this will not be the case. Hopefully he never needs to call the sheriff or he never needs an EMS. You know, he is paying for services like an insurance policy. Maybe he's not using those services right now, but one day he might need them.
Okay. Also during council comments, you spoke about conversations with the Park City Senior Center. They're apparently happy with some of the increased services and staffing that they got from the 2024 budget. What are they looking for in next year's budget?
Well, right now there are lunches served in the Park City Senior Citizens 4 days a week, and they have more part-time staff helping them, which has been huge for them. They would like more staffing. And as they look at their new senior citizens building that they're hopeful will be built here in the next few years, they're going to ask for support on that for furniture and fixtures and items that they'll need for that new senior center. So that will be coming down the pike.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
You know, I do want to go back to the tax conversation real quickly because I want the citizens to understand what is not taxed on this initiative. Groceries, unprepared foods are not taxed. Medical prescriptions are not taxed. And gas and fuel are not taxed. So really, you know, the tax is going to services that impact our guests more than the locals.
Okay. I also just want to mention, because this just kind of popped up, Summit County fire restriction order does go into effect at midnight. Looks like the state forester, in consultation with the county council, has determined that measures must be taken to prevent the ignition of forest and rangeland fires, and the use of any kind of fireworks, tracer ammunition, or exploding targets is prohibited within state land and unincorporated property within Summit County.
That's great news, because it is so dry out there driving around that warm, hot wind. It's really frightening right now. So hopefully people will be cautious.
Okay, Tanya, thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Leslie. Have a great day. Bye.
That's Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen. The Park City School District is in the midst of its $129 million bonded construction projects. On the phone to give us an update on the myriad of construction projects underway, I have the district's Chief Operations Officer, Mike Tanner. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so you're calling in from where?
Right now, I'm visiting family in Chicago, so I'm calling in from there.
Okay. And I know that you do spend part of your time in a small town in Chicago. How much time do you spend in Park City versus Chicago? It's not Chicago, but Northern Illinois.
Well, I spend the majority of my time, obviously, in Park City. My daughter goes to the school district there, and I have job responsibilities that don't allow me to venture out much. But I do spend my vacation time here and an occasional long weekend. So It's good to keep connected to the family, and that's what we do.
Okay. And you know, when I went back and looked at that press release when you started with Park City School District in 2019, and at the time we reported that you were serving with the United States Air Force as both a pilot and a contingency airlift director. And what I found interesting there was that you apparently have helped mobilize resources and orchestrated international airlift operations in support of U.S. wartime and humanitarian relief. And I guess given what we have seen with all of that humanitarian aid happening in the Middle East and, of course, Ukraine, is that something you continue to do?
It is, although I'm approaching retirement right now, so I've extracted my duties from being operationally based to mostly personnel, and they call them hail and farewells when we welcome new people and escort old people out. So I'm in the process of handing the baton operationally over to someone else. But our area is responsible for all the global Department of Defense airlift and has about 1,600 aircraft within the Department of Defense that we can use to support the nation's wartime needs. We have the ability to grab about 1,000 commercial aircraft under a program called CRAF to supplement that. And so the operations have been very busy during this time, supplementing the work that's going on in Ukraine and Israel. And that's what our unit does, and they're very good at it.
All right. So is that done as a military, or is that done as a private consultant?
My work is done as an Air Force reservist.
All right. Let's run through the Park City construction projects. The expansion at both Jeremy Ranch Elementary School and Mapolan, I believe, was considered complete at the end of April.
That's right, and we just got our final pay applications to close out our relationship with the contractor this morning.
Okay, so the punch list items are done.
That's right. Furniture's in. We had a photo shoot that went on in Jeremy yesterday, and things are progressing very well towards a problem reopening for the folks who will be occupying those two facilities.
All right, so both at Jeremy and McPolin, what happened there was that we expanded both schools to make way basically for another grade, four-year-old preschool, as well as before and after school daycare?
That's right, and we also put community spaces in there for the use of our local population and some support services potentially if we would run a medical clinic or a dental clinic or something like that out of those facilities.
So what did other work have to be done to make sure that you had adequate restrooms and cafeteria and multi-purpose spaces there?
That was still all part of the design process. So yes, we did add additional multi-purpose spaces and restrooms, but those were all part of the design.
All right. And then what about the expansion work done for the preschool facilities at both Trailside and Parley's? Is that ready to go?
Those are both underway. All the permitting is complete for those, and they're well underway. If you take a swing by Parley's, you'll see that many of the walls are up. The structural steel for the roofs and the walls are finishing up right now. At Trailside, we'll be laying the foundation and footwork for the walls this week. And so both of those are progressing on schedule, if not ahead of schedule.
Well, when you say that, what schedule are we talking about? Because looking back at what was originally approved, this should have been done last fall.
You know, we did experience permitting delays, both with Summit County and also with the State Board of Education's project number application process. After working through those and reestablishing a new timeline, we're in alignment with that new timeline.
Okay, so we're talking about a new timeline and not what was given to voters that the elementary schools would be completed in the fall of 2023.
Yeah, there's a lot of complicating factors that enter into that that comment. But yes, that is in effect.
Okay, and the new timeline that will also show that Ecker Hill and Park City High School are a year behind schedule as well from what was originally contemplated, because we were expecting to see Ecker Hill open this fall as well as Park City High School and start, you know, in time for the start of the 2024-25 school year.
That's right, but the duration of the projects are still in alignment with the schedule.
All right. At Ecker Hill, the district adding a wing here to make room for the eighth graders. So again, you expect that to be open a year from now?
Actually, we are adding three wings, two academic wings and an expansion of the cafeteria slash gymnasium area. We anticipate having one of those three academic wings open, which will restore the 12 classrooms that we've taken out of the center of the facility. So this year we're concentrating on just moving existing classes that we're demolishing into the new space. Next year we'll have the additional space available to take on the eighth grade.
Okay, so the fall of 2025-26 is what we're talking about.
Yep, next summer.
Yep. All right, and then what about the high school? What's going on there?
High school, yeah, it's also a multi-phase project. So over this last year, we tore down and rebuilt the what we call phase one, which is closest to Lucky John. That construction is finishing up right now, and that'll house our CTE areas and some additional classrooms. It's three stories tall. Very busy over there right now. We've got 80 construction workers on average per day finishing things up, and we're on a positive trajectory to have things open and ready for the children on the 20th of August.
Okay. Again, ninth graders will be moved there again on 2025.
That's right, next summer.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the proposed athletic facilities. There were two proposals for Park City High School, one to remodel part of the building on the east side or to build an addition. The remodel option would provide space for a gym, weight room, wrestling area, and performing arts area. So have we chosen an option here?
No, we're still in the concept phase. We had three concepts that were presented to the board on June 18th. Which was a multi-phase concept. Phase one involves some ball fields being installed right behind the district office just to the east of Treasure Mountain. Phase two would have involved tearing down Treasure Mountain and putting some ball fields there and reworking some of the parking lots. But phases three and four, one of them would involve building a standalone field house. One of them would involve building a field house that was attached to Park City High School, and then reworking some of the existing gyms within the school to repurpose those for other academic efforts. So phases three and four are kind of out in the future, and the board is still looking at those and the holistic execution of this entire concept. And they've asked us to bring back more information for them so they can make a better decision. So we're in the process of gathering that information.
And what are we talking about? I mean, what are these projects range in cost from?
Well, if we look at phase one of the first concept, which is the most likely candidate in my eyes, just adding the ball fields and doing site work, dugouts associated with that is about $7.1 million. If we move and add tennis courts and a support building on that site, that's going to add another $5.4 million. And if we tear down Treasure and convert that space to two lacrosse or football practice fields, that's going to add another $10 million to the price tag. So that entire Treasure Mountain Sports Complex could total about $23 million. And that's why the board hit the pause button July 18th and saying that this is a big decision. We need more information before we commit to anything.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, there's no bond proposal. So is this something that, again, would be paid for with lease revenue bonds? Has that been discussed?
You know, there's a mix of proposals. And, you know, again, this is why the board wanted to take a step back and say, hey, are we executing phase one, phase two, all four phases? What does that look like? And they just wanted more information to be able to jump into that. You know, clearly a larger project would mandate public involvement and most likely a general obligation bond. A smaller project could be accomplished perhaps with fund balances and some savings that we have along with maybe a lease revenue bond. But that financial mix is still in play as the project scope is uncovered.
All right. The teen center, the Park City School Board approved a $1.3 million teen center in June, and it must be completed by June 30th, 2025 in order to keep some of that grant monies. What's the progress on that project?
Yeah, so that's a project within a project. And so our architect is pulling together the final plans, including everything from plumbing through electrical work, through HVAC retrofits, all that work is very meticulous. So they're in the process of delivering their final plan. We will issue a change order to our existing contract with Hogan Construction to do the construction work on that. And so we're on a positive trajectory to hit that timeline as well.
All right. And then that's being built in the space that used to be used by the library or the wood shop?
No, that's being built in the space that used to be used as the wood shop, a part of the wood shop.
Okay. And that wood shop then moving over to the new construction?
That's right. It's going to be a fabrication lab, and it's phenomenal. We can't wait to get our students in there and have the public take a look at it.
All right. Crews finished removing those contaminated soil piles behind Treasure Mountain Junior High School last month. Are there next steps now for the district?
No, we're just waiting for some final tests to come back. We don't anticipate any problems with that. That site is potentially where, if we execute on some of this master athletic facility planning for phase one, where we had tennis courts, that might be an area that's used for tennis courts. But that is all still in the conceptual phase right now. But as far as we're concerned, the project is closed, just pending a few final tests.
All right. When you report to the school board, Mike, every month, you say that the school construction projects are on time, again, under the new timeline. And with the bounds of inflation, can you explain what you mean within the bounds of inflation?
Well, you know, I don't use that term anymore. I did use it quite a bit a year ago in that we were subjected to many unknowns with supply chain issues that were residuals from COVID. And so we were anticipating perhaps a 3 to 5% overage. And we planned for that in the planning process financially, had the funds set aside to address that. And that's what I was getting at within the bounds of inflation. Right now, as I mentioned, our two projects just came finalized for Rick Pullen and Jeremy. And I'm happy to say that those two together came at about $230,000 under budget between the two of those. And once we negotiate a final price with the general contractor, that price is not negotiable. So we work with them to stay under the budget. So we anticipate landing the remainder of the projects under budget as well.
Well, we've heard that in order to stay on or under budget, the scope of the projects were reduced. So where were those cuts made? Just smaller spaces?
Well, I know that's the narrative that's been out in the community, but that's just not the case. When the project is first developed, the people are excited and they kind of build the Taj Mahal. They reach for the skies, right? And then during a value engineering process, we bring it down within reality into the scope of what we can accomplish within the budgetary restraints of the project. And so perhaps that's where that confusion arose during that process of bringing it back onto budget, that we somehow reduced the scope, but that's just not the case. We're hitting all the educational demands of the master facility plan, and once the project was solidified, there have been no reductions to the scope of the project.
Okay, because when I look at like the price of eggs, which are up a third more than they were a year ago, I'm wondering how construction can stay at 3%.
Well, and that's one of the advantages of the design build build process that Park City School District used, and that once that final price tag is negotiated with general contractor, there's no deviation from it. It's a contract that both sides agree on, and that has proven to be a very effective cost management tool during these uncertain economic times.
All right. So that total 3 to 5% overage that you're talking about, that would come out of contingency?
No, it was built into the overall construction plan, and we anticipate, as you do with any project, certain amounts of overage, but luckily we have not had to access that yet.
Okay.
And contingencies and allowances.
All right. Mike, anything else you want to mention?
No, we're really excited to bring things on board. We anticipate a ribbon cutting and open house for both Nick Pullen and Jeremy sometime right before school starts out. We're still figuring out the logistics on that. But we're very excited to get our educators and kids into those spaces and show the voters their return on investment. And I think they'll be very impressed with what we've got in store for them.
All right. Mike Tanner, COO of Park City School District. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, the Swanner Nature Preserve and Eco Center has a number of upcoming events, and in the studio with details, I have mindfulness coach Rebecca Brenner on the phone with us. I have the director of visitor experience and exhibits for the Swanner, Hunter Klingensmith. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
First up is the four-part nature-based mindfulness workshop. Rebecca, you're heading this up. Maybe just before we get there, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in teaching meditation.
Sure. So I am a mindfulness meditation teacher, and I've been teaching mindfulness for over 20 years. I've worked at the Live Well Center at the hospital for several years. I've done a lot of work in the district with teachers and training. And I currently run a small nonprofit here in town with Randy Joe Greenberg called Mindful Summit County, where we offer an array of free and sliding scale classes and courses for mindfulness for the community.
Okay. So this particular series will be held at the Swanner starting when?
Yes. So beginning on Mondays, the four Mondays in August, August 5th through August 26th, we'll be offering a mindfulness class in the evening 6 to 7:30.
Okay. And the cost of that?
The cost is $100. And there's also, people can apply for a waiver if they need.
Okay, and what can people expect to happen those four Mondays?
Yeah, so we're going to be looking closely at how nature can be a support for our wellness practices, specifically mindfulness. We have the beautiful facility of Swanner and the preserve, and we will be in the space and also out in nature, really connecting to how nature is already present, already awake, already interconnected, and we can very quickly and easily tap into that in our own practices.
Yeah, and I guess you use the word mindfulness as opposed to meditation. Are they different?
Yes, so they are different. So meditation is kind of a catch-all for, I mean, endless amounts of practices. And mindfulness is a very specific practice where we're training, it's a cognitive training of our attention in the present moment.
Yeah. What have you noticed over the time, over the years, right? With, I mean, we are so distracted, you know, it's where's the squirrel, where's the bright light, right? I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Do you have all day? mindfulness has been really, I can't see this, enough, a life-changing practice for me. It has helped me be more present in my life with what's going on in my own mind, my own heart, my own healing, in my relationships, in my work, in my parenting. Really has allowed me to show up more fully and skillfully work with the moment as it is.
Yeah, so it's about being present as opposed to have been distracted.
It is. It's about learning that we all have the capacity to notice when we're caught up in our distractions, when we're caught up in our thinking mind, when we're caught up in ruminating, worrying, stress, too much time on the phone, etc. And learning that we have the capacity to come out of that, to come back into our bodies, back into our breath, and be awake and present to the moment as it is.
So is this for new students of mindfulness or somebody who's been practicing this a while?
For everyone. Yeah, everyone will benefit from having the opportunity to come together in community, to be in such a beautiful space, and take the time out of our busy schedules to practice together and remember this capacity that we have to be present and embodied.
All right, what do people need to bring with them?
You know, a cushion to sit on or a mat. There are chairs at the preserve that we can use, but really just bring yourself and we will take care of you.
Okay, registration I believe is on the Swanner Eco Center page.
Correct.
All right, let's move on. Hunter, you've got also your annual Wine Among the Willows set for Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7. What happens here?
We do. We're excited to be bringing this event back. We had a little pause. We didn't do one last year, but we're excited to be back. So it'll be, every attendee will get to rotate through five tasting stations. We're partnering with a new partner this year for Wine Among the Willows. We're partnering with Vine Lore, who's a wine distributor, and they're bringing in a few wineries who are practiced in sustainable, biodynamic, and innovative wines. And our goal is to look at wine production that puts the health of people and the planet at the forefront of what they're doing. So we'll rotate through those five stations. We'll start that rotation at 4:30 p.m. The event goes from 4 to 7. And we'll have food from Hearth and Hill that you'll get a chance to eat before and during the event. And then as we move through those stations, you'll kind of follow one of your guides. And then at each station, there'll be a wine expert there to talk about the production and process for each wine that you're tasting. And then at the end, you'll have time to mingle, ask questions of the winemakers and the wine experts. And just a great time to see the preserve, too. That 4 to 7 p.m. hour is one of my favorite times on the preserve. We tend to see a lot of wildlife. The sunset, although we'll be a little bit early for that, will kind of be starting, and it'll just be beautiful lighting and a great time to be out there.
Okay. The cost of this is how much?
This one is $50 for SWANR members and $70 for non-member people who aren't members of SWANR.
Okay.
And there's also an option to request a fee waiver for this one as well. We want to make sure that all of our events are accessible, even if cost is a barrier.
So is this a fundraiser or really just a chance to get people out onto the preserve at a nice time of evening?
The goal for this event is just a chance to get people out onto the preserve, learn a little bit about how we can make good decisions when purchasing and eating what we're eating and drinking. So we know that there are the things that we choose to buy and eat, consume have big impacts on both people and the planet. And so we want to offer an opportunity for people to learn a little bit more about how to be sustainable and environmentally friendly and people friendly in those decisions.
All right. You've got an upcoming exhibit titled Beauty in the Beaks. Tell us about this.
We do. So this one will open August 23rd and run through December 1st. And this exhibit we're doing in partnership with two photographers who actually live right on the edge of the preserve. And since COVID, they've been living here full time and photographing the changing seasons of the preserve, but also our mascot bird, the sandhill crane. So Steve Krongard and Jody Buren are those photographers. And so it'll be a photography exhibit, but we're also supplementing it with a lot of hands-on interactive. So we'll have kids areas, opportunities for you to interact, and some fun ways for you to even share kind of your love story of nature with other people. So the subtitle of this exhibit is a photographic love letter to the SWANR Preserve. And when Steve and Jody came up to us and asked about this exhibit, they said, you know, we just have loved seeing how the preserve changes and all of the variety that's within it and the beauty that's there. And so beauty is the preserve and the beaks are the sandhill cranes, and those will be the features of this exhibit. And we're really excited to have it in our space.
All right. Well, speaking of the cranes, how are the returning cranes and their cults doing?
They're doing great. We have the pair that nested right outside of the Eco Center had one colt, and we've been seeing them out there moving around on the preserve. And then we've been seeing another pair as well that has two colts. And they're pretty big now. We saw one. We were just out with the Master Naturalist class at the Spring Creek Trailhead this past week. And we saw a family of three with one colt, and the colt is about as tall as the parents are now. It doesn't have the red head yet, but I assume that they'll be starting to learn to fly very soon.
Yeah. Now, do the offspring continue to come back to Park City like their parents do, or do they need to find new places to go?
Likely, eventually, they need to find new places to go, but some might return. They actually stay with their parents for a whole year, so they'll go to their winter nest or winter habitat, likely New Mexico, south of here, with the parents, and then they'll come back with the parents to the preserve, and then about 30 days before they're ready to lay eggs, they'll kind of send them off on their own. And then at that point, they hang out in adolescent groups, so you'll see, like, 5-10 cranes all together, and that tends to be those adolescent groups that aren't sexually mature yet, so they are just hanging out until they find a mate and start being on their own in the summertime and finding a new location.
Okay, you have several ongoing volunteer needs. It looks like you need a lot of help pulling weeds Wednesday mornings.
Yeah, every Wednesday morning, there are tons of invasive plant species on the preserve, but because we have a relatively small area to be able to maintain, we try to mitigate as best as possible. And we love our volunteers for helping with that. So yeah, every Wednesday morning from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m., you can sign up on our website. And Rhea, our conservation director, will give you all the information for where you need to meet and what you need to bring. And it's a great opportunity to get out to some of the areas of the preserve that don't usually have public access. So maybe towards the ponds that are on the south side or in those areas. So it's a we really appreciate all of the help that we get from our great volunteers in that way.
Okay, I got to leave it there. People can find out more on online.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. We appreciate it.
Okay, that's Hunter Klingensmith and Rebecca Brenner. Thank you for your time.